It's time for the Climate Cast when we talk about the science of climate change. NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is here. Welcome back. I've missed you.
Oh, it's good to be back.
You're better now,
aren't
you?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
Today, why California may be setting an example for other dry places. The new water conservation numbers are in for September, and they're remarkably good. Since June, the citizens of California have collectively cut back on their water usage by 28%, even though some parts of the state are doing better than others, and we'll talk about why that is. We're turning to Molly Peterson. She's a reporter for KPCC, our sister station in Southern California, and she's leading their coverage on water and drought issues. Molly, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So these conservation mandates started when Governor Brown ordered urban dwelling water customers to cut back. Is that how it happened? And when was that?
Well, the drought was declared last year. The governor put a lot of the power for deciding exactly how to mandate these cutbacks in our state water board, our state water resources control board. They actually began tracking how much water per capita individual urban water districts used for the first time in California history, which is its own amazing story. And once they had those numbers, they were able to sort of set sub-conservation goals within this 25% mandate. So some districts that were particularly thirsty were cutting as much as 36%. Some districts that were particularly thrifty were cutting as little as 4%.
You know, I have to say, I hear you when you say it's its own amazing story that they were not tracking how much water California was. How could that be?
Well, they were tracking. It's not as bad as perhaps you're fearing. They were tracking something called a production number. So how much water the entire, you know, system of the municipality took. They weren't actually figuring out, but there's a lot of loss within that number. And for a lot of technical reasons, that number doesn't tell you very much about how much water each individual city uses. Some cities have very leaky pipes because they're old, for example. So the leak rate figures into that final number. What they actually did was measure basically at the other end of the garden hose where the water was actually going into individual homes and meters and submeters within a city. And that they really had never tracked that before. And I as a Californian, find that surprising.
Yeah. What's the key thing that you'd say that Californians are doing that's really making the difference?
I think the interesting thing is there is no one thing. I know that's not anyone's favorite answer, but I'm thinking about, for example, my hometown of Menlo Park, California, which is in Northern California, is the savingest city in the entire state. They passed their conservation standard. I'm very proud of them, especially my
dad. I can hear that.
Because they passed their conservation district by 33.7%.
Wow.
My dad is not necessarily someone who has ever thought about how he needs to moderate his water use. He's got a pool. He lives in the suburbs. But huge amounts of California's water is outdoor water use. And outdoor water use in Menlo Park, California has dropped dramatically. My sister got married in the backyard of my dad's house this summer, and the lawn was brown, and they called it a virtuous brown.
That's good.
So there is this change in mindset. I also think Californians are thinking about this as a long-term problem. In a poll this summer, 62% of Californians said that this drought, they're worried about this drought as a long-term problem, and they connect it to climate change.
Molly, it's Paul Huttner here. Good to talk to you this morning. This is really crunch time for California after 4 years of drought. Those of us in the weather and climate end of this business, looking, of course, at El Nino and hoping that it gives you at least a short-term boost there in water levels. I see, just looking at some reservoir levels, 7% to 36% of capacity across California. And, of course, we're banking on that El Nino, the Godzilla El Nino, to potentially deliver heavy rains and, of course, more importantly, mountain snows. What's the flavor there? What's the feeling as folks look at this El Nino? I'm sure it's making news on almost a daily basis as we head into this winter.
That's right. I mean, we are just yesterday, actually, the city of Los Angeles and the sanitation district, its Department of Water and Power, all the kind of local authorities showcased something they'd like to see at more local homes, which is a system to capture water, to do what we call low impact development, trap more water close to where it falls and use it on the property where it lands. That's something that we've been talking about in Southern California for the last 7, 8, 9 years, not just because of water shortages, but also because urban runoff pollutes our coast. Mm-hmm. So there is some concern already, and there's some awareness about how to capture water that way. You know, the other thing is there's messaging complications, as you describe. When you talk about something as a Godzilla El Nino, there's a whole bunch of other policy guys who say, oh no, please don't do that. Because what they want is, you know, they want the public to be aware that while we are potentially in for some very strong rain, and of course reservoirs, we're very concerned about the reservoirs and the snowpack. In Southern California, you know, we're facing the potential for floods, and we may not, we're very, very likely not going to be out of a drought when this is over.
You know, Paul, we were talking before we got on the air that some areas of the state have done better than others, and I was saying Beverly Hills has not hit their targets.
Surprise.
Yeah, and some of this, I mean, I hear what Molly's saying about if people think, well, the rain is, you know, the El Nino is going to take care of this. Those people in Beverly Hills might not have to work as hard as they really should be.
Well, right? And I think there's a lot of education process going on, and that people are realizing it's really the snowpack that drives reservoir levels in California. So, and especially Northern California, more than Southern California, is where you need that snowpack and water to be stored for the upcoming year. But I'm interested too, Molly. I spent 9 years in Tucson, Arizona, and xeriscaping is a thing there. My yard was full of drip irrigation and very drought-resistant desert plants. Is that catching on at all in California?
Well, it is. We did have, through one of our major urban water suppliers, a wholesaler called the Metropolitan Water District, they offered an enormous cash for grass program where they paid people to rid themselves of their lawns. The long-term impact of that is unclear, but I'll tell you about the city of Long Beach. The city of Long Beach actually took some money from this project and did something very specific. They asked people to replace their front lawns for two reasons. One, they didn't want to be in the business of going into people's backyards and checking what was going on back there. And two, when I talked to the general manager there, who's now retired, he said the point was to show each other how to have a different kind of yard in California. You know, to other your points, the snowpack is very important to Southern California because of the way our water system works here. We get a lot of our water in Southern California. We import it from that part of the state, and we watch that pretty closely. Los Angeles is a little bit of a special case. We get some of our water from the Colorado river system, and of course, they're in a drought as well. But the northern part of the state is very, very important to Southern California. You know, when you talk about Beverly Hills, even within the city of Los Angeles, Bel Air, we've had a lot of discussion about these water hogs lately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you have the money, it's hard to reach people with any good messaging.
Yeah, exactly. I want to say, if you're listening, and it's the Climate Cast, and Molly Peterson is with us from KPCC. She leads their coverage on water and drought issues. And you just heard her refer to some of these areas of California that are not meeting their water conservation targets. Here's a few numbers to throw at that. Paul, Beverly Hills missed its target by 12%. The Coachella Valley Water District had a target of 36%. They came up with an average reduction of 27% from June to September. Molly, have they had to pay fines? And what happens next in these cities?
Well, so far, the water district has been working with them. The ones that the highest profile ones, in the names of cities that you actually know, they have not been fined. What the water board wants to see is kind of less stick and more carrot. So they want to see progress. And I'll give you an example. The Coachella Valley Water District instituted some tiered pricing and kind of individual water budgets. So for a particular property, here's the amount of water we think you should be using. If you use significantly above that, a wasteful amount, we're going to charge you more per unit of water.
Wow.
That's actually working, but they're still behind. behind. They're still 7 or 8% off. They're not kind of finding them on a you missed by 7%, you pay $700 way. They're really trying to work with these individual water districts, especially since overall there's such a strong performance from the state.
Molly, really good to have you on the show. Thank you very much. And I hope we can talk again.
Me too. Thank you.
Thanks, Molly.
Molly Peterson heads the water and drought issue coverage for KPCC. Paul, I didn't want to end without asking you about some of the other stories that you're watching. I've got about a minute and a half for that.
Well, I'll tell you the big one, and I just posted this yesterday in Updraft, the winter forecast for Minnesota, California, and other places. There are two main competing factors at work this winter that climate forecasters are watching. One is, of course, this El Nino, which is now on par to rival the El Nino event of record in 97-98. The ocean temperatures are every bit as warm as they were then. That was a blockbuster El Nino for California in terms of producing rainfall and mountain snows. So we're hopeful that that could happen again. Every El Nino is different. For Minnesota, that signal is very mild for winter. We average between about 4 and 7 degrees warmer than average in those big El Nino years. The other factor is Siberian snow cover. It is running above average, and Judah Cohen with Atmospheric Environmental Research, a researcher, has drawn a link between that heavy snow cover and colder winters in the eastern half of the U.S. So those two forces competing against each other this year. I'm a believer, I'm in the camp that El Nino will win out and that our winter will end up milder than average here in Minnesota, with maybe average or less than average snowfall, but we can still have decent snow years in El Nino winter. So that will be something to watch as we head through the next 3 to 4 months.
Potentially an average increase of temperature 4 to 7 degrees.
Yeah, I'm forecasting 4 to 8 degrees warmer than average by the time winter is said and done. Again, it's not a slam dunk, maybe 70 to 80% correlation with those strong El Nino years.
Great to have you back. Paul Hudner back with me on the Climate Cast.
Thanks, Carrie.